Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again to another live edition of Wall Street Unspun. This is Wednesday, March 8th. And I'm Peter Schiff, president of Euro Pacific Capital, and I am broadcasting live on my website at www.europac.net, EUROPAC.net, europac.net, and on shortwave radio at 5.07 megahertz. That's 5.07 megahertz on the shortwave dial, and we do this live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Well, once again, a lot going on in the markets, particularly again in the precious metals and natural resource markets. We continue to see a decline in the price of gold, although the decline in the price of mining shares is far more substantial than a decline in the price of gold. I mean, gold is still about $540. And, you know, really the high was about 570. We only touched that briefly. But in the last couple of weeks, you know, we moved off from 560 to 540, really about a $20 move in the price of gold. But many of these major mining companies are now trading at levels they haven't seen since gold was at $485 an ounce. So the mining stocks have given back. I mean, some of the stocks I own in my own account, a couple of them, are down 30% in the last couple of weeks. Just a huge, huge move down in some of these stocks. And again, it shows you the degree of skepticism that's in the market where people are so quick to abandon these positions. And it also shows you the amount of speculators and leverage in the market. Not only if you look at what's happening in some of these, you know, we have a bond fund that we trade on the American Exchange, Australian Government Bond Fund. It's gotten whacked in the last few days. No reason. The value of the units hasn't gone down at all. All that's happened is a discount has widened because I think some people, again, every time there's some panic selling, there's some margin call that happens to the stock. Look at the price of natural gas, which have just plunged. I mean, absolutely plunged in a very, very short period of time. And I think this is a reflection of the speculators, the hedge funds that are active in these markets. And, you know, it's not that the hedge funds and the speculators are causing the markets to move in their long-term trend. The long-term trends are being controlled by fundamental factors having very little to do with the speculators. But what happens is the speculators and the hot money is drawn into these markets by the performance. And on the margin, they do add to the volatility, particularly in the recent trading sessions. We've seen a collapse in natural gas prices. Now, there were some fundamental reasons for it. I mean, I guess the winter was not as cold as people had thought it might have been. In fact, I think January, February, one of them was the warmest winter on record here in the Northeast, although it didn't seem too warm to me, being a California transplant living out here. It didn't seem that warm, but apparently it was. So maybe there were some extra inventories built up that were liquidated, but, I mean, nothing like what we've seen, and I think a lot of it has to do with the speculative positions that were built up, where speculators were long natural gas looking to sell it into the winter season, and it didn't sell, and now they're rushing for the exits. And this is really exacerbating the movements in these commodities. Now, several of our oil and gas trusts, the listeners of this program know, and any of our clients know, we've been recommending these trusts for years, and a couple of our trusts that are mainly oil are still right near their 52-week highs. I mean, I was hoping for some of my favorite oil trusts to pull back, and they haven't. You know, I would love to have seen a little bit of weakness there. Oil prices did dip back below $60 a barrel, but the damage in oil is nothing like what we've seen in natural gas. But one of my favorite royalty trusts that is very heavily in the natural gas has basically moved down about 30% since its peak price, earlier this year or late last year. It is a great buy, in my opinion. The yield is up to, over 17% right now. I know this stock well. I've been buying this stock for about 5 or 6 years. Believe it or not, I first started buying it for clients at $8 a share. $8 a share. I mean, I own it in my own account as well. I've owned it for years, and it was as high as almost 30 bucks this year. And when I first started buying it, it had a 14 or 15% dividend yield when people were paying 8 bucks for it. And it still has a 17% dividend yield. But imagine if you had owned these shares in my account at 8 bucks. You know, your dividend yield is way over 15% now. It's more like 40% a year based on your cost basis. So we've had great past results of these. Again, you know, it's no guarantee that it's going to do well in the future. It never is. But my opinion is that we've got a long way to go in commodities, natural gas in particular. I think prices are going to bounce back and bounce back strong. I think this big decline is a, you know, supply and demand imbalance in the short run, exacerbated by the leveraged speculators running for the exits. I take advantage of it. And, you know, if you're interested in learning a little bit more about my favorite natural gas royalty trust up in Canada, give my office a call. Talk specifically about this stock and, you know, find whether it's appropriate for you. Certainly, if you already own it, you might own it at a profit. If you've owned it for a while, it's a good chance to average up on the pullback. And if you happen to have bought it for the first time a few months ago and now you may be down, you know, 10 or 15%, it's a good time to buy some more. But anybody, call one of my brokers, 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. I don't know if anybody's there right now. They'll certainly be there in the morning. You might want to try the Phoenix or the California office. There might be some brokers there right now. If you want to get your orders in for tomorrow morning, you can call Phoenix at 800-727-6435, 800-727-6435, or Newport Beach at 800-863-9500. 800-863-9500 for Newport Beach. But I would get these orders in right away. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see this particular stock really bounce back because it's taken such a big hit. And, you know, once, these leverage players are in there, I think a lot of the hedge funds are buying a lot of these royalty trusts on margin because these guys, you know, they make 2 and 20. I mean, what that is they charge their clients 2% management fee every year. And on top of that, they take 20% of the profits. So they make a lot of money when they guess right. And one of the ways they've been able to do that is through leverage. Because, you know, let's say you're getting a 20% of the profits. Well, if you just invest and get a 10% return, all right, so you're going to get 20% of 10, that's 2. But what if you leverage yourself up and you leverage it 3-1? Now, you don't have to be any smarter, but just using leverage and it turns a 10% return into a 30% return. And now these hedge fund managers are enriching themselves. And where the perverse moral hazard is these guys are taking a lot of risk with somebody else's money. And they get a big payday if they're right. And if they're wrong, oh, well, it wasn't their money. They don't lose. So, and I think a lot of these hedge funds, the way they're really having better performance than the markets in general, is not because the hedge fund managers are so smart and they're making great returns. It's just that they're taking a lot of risk and they're magnifying normal returns through the use of leverage. And as long as those normal returns are positive, leverage works out. But, you know, if that turns around, and especially with the cost of leverage going up as interest rates are rising, and we're going to talk about the rise in rates a little bit more later in the program, but that's going to make these it that much more difficult for these hedge funds to make money. And if these positions start going the other way, look out. But in the meantime, I think the volatility has created some great opportunities for my clients to pick up more of these trusts. And, you know, if you are interested in picking up some gold stocks, some of my favorites, some of these South African stocks, some big quality companies have really come under some pressure. These gold stocks are far more speculative, in my opinion, than some of the energy trusts and some of the other utilities and other value stocks that we recommend at Euro-Pacific. But I'm a big believer in them. I got a lot of money in them myself. I think gold, this is the real deal. I think we're in for a huge bull market. And I think, you know, if there are stocks that are going up 10 or 20-fold, that's where you're going to find them, in the metal sector. And so if you're willing to take risk, you know, here's a pullback that's worth buying. Again, any of the brokers at Euro-Pacific Capital can talk to you about these gold stocks. Anyway, I want to give out the phone number. This is a call-in program, and I certainly encourage listeners to call. I'd rather the show not be a monologue, but a dialogue with me and the callers. So the number to call toll-free to ask me a question or just make a comment, a welcome call, certainly from clients. I always like to hear from clients, but also prospective clients and new listeners. The number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. And the lines are open, and so we are awaiting your telephone calls. Also, what's been happening in the market, alongside of declining precious metals prices and energy, is rising interest rates. And I talked about this last week, that the technical picture for the bond market looked to me like it was deteriorating, and it has deteriorated quite a bit. The 10-year is now up to about 4.75, and it was about 4.5 going about a week ago. And that's a big move. I mean, 25 basis points in about a week is a big move. And I think the coast is clear over the next week or two. We can move up to 4.9 to 5%. And if that doesn't ruffle any feathers, I think, you know, we're going to get through 5%. And I think, you know, within the next couple of months, given the momentum that I see building in this market and the technical picture, I wouldn't be surprised if we were up at 540 to 550 within a few months. And that's a pretty big increase in yields, and that is going to send mortgage rates, fixed-rate mortgages, quite a bit higher. Now, we know that Bernanke is going to inch up short-term rates at least one more time, if not two, and so you're going to have the adjustable-rate mortgages moving up as well, and this is going to create some real, real problems, as I've been talking about, in the housing bubble and in its bursting. But also, you know, we're seeing interest rates backing up in Europe. We had a rate hike there. We're getting ready for our first rate hike in I don't know how many years in Japan, finally starting to raise rates. Unfortunately, I think that they're going to, again, raise them too slowly, which will be very bullish still for the precious metals. You know, it's very funny, too. There's a lot of talk in the media about, oh, Japan's been suffering from deflation. They've been suffering from deflation, and that's why they've had this low interest rate policy. This is all a bunch of nonsense. They haven't been suffering from deflation. Now, first of all, when they talk about deflation, what they're really talking about is falling consumer prices. And Japan has had a moderate decline in their consumer price level. But you don't suffer from that. That's a good thing. I mean, that's like saying they're suffering from happiness. They're suffering from wealth. Falling consumer prices are positive. You don't suffer from that. You bask in it. You benefit from it. Now, sure, there's been some problems in the Japanese economy. Those problems are not a result of falling consumer prices. In fact, if anything, falling consumer prices has lessened the severity of those problems. They've cushioned the blow. If they didn't have falling consumer prices, if consumer prices were rising instead, then the Japanese economy would have been in worse shape. Right? I mean, that's the silver lining, is that the consumers have gotten a better deal. That prices have been declining. The problems have been that they have been slow to liquidate a lot of the malinvestments that were built up over the 1980s bubble that they had in Japan. And that's the problem. The problem is that the government has been preventing the free market from more efficiently liquidating the malinvestments created during the boom years. The fact that consumers have benefited during this time from a general fall in the level of consumer prices has been one of the main positives in the bright spots of the Japanese economy. It's crazy that now the politicians or the media is trying to present the situation as a negative, and that now that the Japanese government has succeeded in finally getting inflation back, getting prices to rise, that this is a victory, that this is good news for the Japanese. And this, again, is a masterpiece of propaganda, that the government can engineer a rise in the cost of living and then convince everybody that they've done a good thing. That somehow having to pay more money for stuff is preferential to paying less. It's unbelievable that we have this kind of ignorance among, not only among the public, certainly, but among professional economists on Wall Street, that people are actually fooled by this, you know, government nonsense that a rising cost of living is somehow a positive and that we need to worry about a falling cost of living. And, you know, I mean, some people, the foolish arguments that they make about, oh, no, if there's deflation, the economy is in trouble. They have two arguments, neither of which holds water. One is that if prices are falling, consumers aren't going to buy because they're going to wait for cheaper prices. And so the economy is going to grind to a halt because no one's going to want to buy when prices are falling. Well, it's a bunch of nonsense. And the way you know it's nonsense is, you know, look at how computers are selling. Every year, computers are cheaper than the year before. Digital cameras, camcorders, cell phones. I mean, you name it. Any kind of electronic equipment, television sets, you know, get cheaper every year. So, but they sell like hotcakes. I mean, do people say, I'm not going to buy a new television set because I know if I wait a year, the television set I buy is going to be cheaper? No. They buy it because they want to watch television. They don't want to wait another year. And then they'd wait again. They always get cheaper. But they're selling these products. People do not wait. People buy what they want. Now, if you can't afford it, there are plenty of people who, when plasma screens first came out, didn't want to buy them because they knew if they waited, they would be cheap enough and then they can afford to buy them. So they waited. But the people who were rich enough, who can afford them, bought them as soon as they came out. They didn't wait. So the only reason that some people wait for prices to fall before they buy is because they can't afford the higher prices. It's not that the fact that they're going to fall. Now, if big screen TV prices or plasma TV screen prices never fell, right? They started out at 10,000 and now instead of being 2,000, they were still 10,000 or they went up to 11,000 or 12,000. That wouldn't mean a guy that couldn't afford one would say, "You know what? I'm going to buy this $10,000 TV right now because if I don't buy it right now, next year it's going to cost 11,000." No. That person would just never buy it. He's not going to spend $10,000 on a TV. He'll wait till it comes down to a price he can afford. And as soon as he can afford it, he'll buy it. Right? If he can afford $2,000, he's not going to say, no, I don't want to pay $2,000. I'm going to wait till next year when it's $1,000. At some point, people are going to buy. And so this nonsense that falling prices discourages consumer spending is absolute nonsense. And then number two, the other ridiculous argument, is that falling prices hurt corporate profits, that if corporations are seeing prices falling, they're not making money. If they're not making money, they're going to lay people off, they're not going to invest, and so falling prices could bring on a recession because it's going to hurt profitability. Now, this is all nonsense, too, because it assumes that the only prices that are falling are the retail prices for the merchandise they're selling. Well, what about the price of the components that go into manufacturing or producing the product, right? Their costs. In a normal deflationary environment or a falling price environment, all prices are falling, not just consumer prices, but costs are falling. The costs of production are falling. And what's important to profitability is not price, but margins. And if prices are falling, but costs are falling, and margins are maintained, then corporations are not losing profitability based on falling prices. And in many cases, they could actually be increasing their profitability with falling prices because falling prices could increase demand because the lower the prices are, the more potential customers can afford to buy the product. So as long as they can maintain their margins, as long as their costs are falling in line with their prices, or even if their margins are shrinking a little bit, but they're selling more products because of the lower prices, it is very possible, in fact, likely, that corporations will see profits increasing in a falling consumer price environment. So it's all nonsense. I mean, there's nothing but good things from falling prices. But, of course, The government doesn't want that. The government wants to be able to create inflation so they can spend money into circulation, so they can, you know, spend money on vote-gathering projects and dole out money to their constituents and create inflation. And they want to create some cover so they can pretend that they're saving us from the menaces of falling prices. And now they can go out and run these deficits and ramp up inflation and pat themselves on the back and tell us what a great thing they did by preventing the cost of living from falling, by making sure that we don't get to buy things cheaper, that we have to pay more money for stuff. Isn't that nice of these politicians? Isn't it a good thing that we sent them to Washington to save us from having to suffer the agony of being able to buy things for less? Anyway, let me take a quick break. Remember, the lines are open. So give me a call, the number to call for your questions or comments. I haven't got any calls yet. I hope it means the signal is going through. But the number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back, hopefully, for some calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, I'm back, and once again, alone. So if you're listening to this, give me a call. The lines are open. Let me give out the toll-free number once again, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597, the number to call toll-free to be on the air with Peter Schiff. Anyway, another topic of discussion I want to address today, and I would definitely encourage everybody who's listening to this to read the article on my website. It's the top news story, and it's a piece written by Bill Fleckenstein. Fleckenstein is one of the few people other than myself in the financial services industry who has his head on straight, who knows what he's talking about. He's a very bright guy, and you know, he runs money up in San Francisco. I'm sure he does quite well. You know, I run into him at a lot of the conferences that I go to, and I do make a point of reading what he writes. He's one of the few people that I can read stuff from and actually learn things. And, you know, there are other people out there. And again, I'm not the only one that understands this or gets this. But Bill Fleckenstein's a good guy, and he's got a piece on there in which he is referencing an essay written by an economist. And the essay will be available on this website in a few days, and I can't wait to read it myself. And if you go to this article, the title of it is something like, you know, The Numbers Lie, or Liars Figure, or The Truth Behind the Numbers. But go on there, and it'll give you a link, and you can download for free. You got to sign up for this site, but you can download, and you can get you can read this story. But in any event, the guy has got, he did a lot of studies, and I want to see his studies, because he's basically proving what I've been saying for years about these government numbers. And what his conclusions were was that if we measured unemployment today, okay, if we measured unemployment today in the same way that we measured unemployment, you know, back during, you know, the 1930s and 1940s, back during the Great Depression years, if we counted it the same way, because, you know, back then in the Great Depression, unemployment got as high as 25%. I mean, it didn't stay there, but I think that was about the peak, 20-25%. But if we measured it the way we did then, the unemployment rate right now in the United States is 12%. 12%. Now, why is it only 4%? Well, the reason it's 4% is because we don't calculate it the way we used to. The government has changed the way it's calculated so that many people who are unemployed, who would have been counted as being unemployed in the past, today are not counted as unemployed. Which means if we recalculated the unemployment during the Great Depression using today's methodology, perhaps unemployment would have only been about 10 or 11% back then. Now, it's not just unemployment. He looked at the CPI. And based on his redoing the numbers, based on the old methodology, which was in effect during the 1970s, last year, the CPI was up by 4% using the new current methodology. But using the old methodology, consumer prices rose by 8%, twice as much as the government reports, 8%. Now, no wonder that, you know, the government is claiming victory over inflation. It's not because they actually have a victory. They just reported it differently. They just turned an 8% inflation into a 4% inflation with the magic of their statistics. And, you know, there are a number of ways they do this in the CPI, you know, with hedonic adjusting. And, you know, they have this thing that they switched, according to this guy, they switched from arithmetic to geometric. And what that meant is that in the CPI, when they're adding up the components, if something goes down in price, it has a higher weighting than something that goes up. So if you only had two things, and one thing went up 5%, one thing went down 5%, it wouldn't be unchanged. They would report a fall in the price because they give a higher weight to things that fall than things that rise. That's one thing that helps it out. But one of the main things is this nonsense of substitution. And what the government does is that if the price of something goes up, they don't have to calculate that. You know, let's say the price of steak goes up from $3 a pound to $4 a pound. I mean, I don't know what the price is. Obviously, it's more than that. But let's say it goes up from $10 a pound to $11 a pound, 10% increase. The government can say, you know what? Let's assume that because of the higher price for steak, the consumer switched to hamburger. And hamburger is only $5 a pound. So instead of meat going up by 1%, it went down by 50% because people switched from steak to hamburger. And this substitution effect is all a bunch of nonsense because then you can switch from hamburger to dog food. And the government's going to say the prices aren't going up. You know, but meanwhile, you're eating dog food instead of steak because you can't afford steak anymore because the price has risen. But, you know, and obviously it's not as dramatic as that in any one thing. But on the margin, the government is taking things that went up in price and kicking them out and replacing them with something else that's less expensive or went down and making this false index. Because if you want to know what's happening to prices, you have to measure the same prices. You just can't keep changing things around because what they're really measuring then is like a survival index. What does it cost you to survive? You know, how can you eke out a standard of living? Even if you have to constantly substitute lower quality, less desirable stuff, but spend the same amount of money. And then the other thing that he pointed out was that the GMP, that if they were still calculating the GMP the way they did back in the whatever 70s or whatever, that instead of last year having a growth rate of 4%, the economy would have contracted. That the real growth rate of the economy was negative. We actually were in a recession for the whole year, but you don't know it because of the phony numbers. And I think a lot of the things he had in there were something like the imputed income. Like, the government throws into GMP a lot of numbers that don't exist. For example, rental income is part of GMP, right? GMP is rental income that everybody collects. But 45% of the rental income that is in the GDP number was never paid to anybody. No one collected a nickel. It's called imputed rent. Basically, what imputed rent means is if you own a house, the government assumes that you're renting it to yourself. The fact that you're not charging your rent, that's immaterial. And the government assumes, well, you could have rented it to yourself, and you could have charged yourself a couple thousand dollars a month, so let's assume you earned a couple of thousand dollars a month, and we'll stick that in the GMP. They do the same thing with interest. Like, he's read about 25% of all the interest income that's in there, 25% of it is imputed. It's the interest that you should have paid yourself for the money that you didn't borrow from yourself. And there's all kinds of nonsense. It's not just this stuff. There's a lot of fluff and a lot of make-believe in these numbers. So I want to read his information. But that makes sense to me. It makes sense to me that the government is fudging these numbers. Because we're not getting richer, we're getting poorer. That's why we're going deeper into debt. Americans are going deeper into debt because they're getting poorer. You know, the government, Wall Street, wants us to believe that everything is so prosperous, that the economy is doing so well, but everybody is going deeper into debt. Now, if we were doing well, we should be paying off debt. We should be getting out of debt. You know, I've never gotten to a situation, you ask your friend a question, hey, how you doing? How's your business? How you doing this year? And he goes, well, you know, I maxed out all my credit cards. I took out a second mortgage on my house. I raided my kids' retirement funds. Yeah, I'm doing great. I mean, does that make any sense? You know, what a response would be, oh, I'm having a great year. I paid off my mortgage. I'm out of debt. I paid off my credit cards, right? I mean, when you're successful, you pay off your debt. Paying off debt, retiring your debts, is a sign of success, of achievement, of doing well. Not going deeper into the hole, but this is what the government wants us to believe. But the problem is the reason that Americans are going deeper into debt is because things are getting worse. They're struggling to make it. They're borrowing money against their phony values of their houses so they can pay for more expensive food. You know, they can make up for inadequate wages. And the government is manufacturing these phony statistics, and it's amazing that you see the commentators on television and Wall Street, they're wondering, why doesn't the public understand? Why is confidence falling? Why is the president so unpopular? Don't the people know how great things are? Don't they look at the numbers? Don't they look at the GNP and the CPI? The reason is they don't look at those numbers. They look at reality, and they see how things are. It's Wall Street that needs to wake up and throw away these numbers. And forget about this government propaganda and take a look at the reality, because the reality is very different from this phony, prosperity, this illusion of prosperity that the government creates with their phony numbers. Anyway, I know I got a call on the line. I've been holding Charles from Florida. Go ahead, Charles.
How you doing, young man?
I'm not as young as I used to be. How you doing?
Same here. Well, I'll tell you something that you haven't brought up. Now, back in the 30s, when they had the Depression, things went way down. In fact, people bartered. And I'm starting to see this again amongst the baby boomers. They're raising gardens in their backyards. They're trading food for clothing. And some people are trading gold and silver for stuff, or antiques, or you name it, a car for something. And when you have a barter system, before you know it, people lose interest in the phony currency system, which is just an inked number on a piece of scrap paper, to put it in.
Oh, yeah, and you know, with the eBays and stuff, it's a lot easier for people to barter with one another.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of internet services where you can deposit gold bullion and use it to pay for things. And yeah, I think people are going to move away from these fiat currencies. And I also do think that you're going to start to see, you know, more home gardens and people doing things, because, you know, we're not going to be able to get all this cheap stuff from Asia anymore once the dollar collapses.
And if
people are going to have to, you know, we're going to see a lower standard of living in America. I mean, people are going to learn how to sew again. You know, back in the olden days, you know, oh man, you know, women would actually sew. I mean, if your socks got a hole in them, they'd darn them. But, I mean, now we just throw them away and buy another one because we're getting them cheap from the Chinese. But when the dollar collapses and we can't buy all these cheap socks from the Chinese, you know, we're not just going to throw away a pair of socks if it's got a hole in it. We're going to sew it. Same thing with pants. And people are going to start to fix things again as opposed to just buy new ones because they're not going to be so cheap anymore.
That's true. And if another tsunami hits Indochina, I'll tell you one thing, if it's worse than the one before, hey, people around here are going to have to learn to depend on them.
Well, the big tsunami is going to be the one that hits the United States, and it's going to be a tsunami of dollars coming back from Asia, and we're going to be drowning in them. And, you know, when all those paper dollars come back here, you know, prices are going to go through the roof.
Yeah, it'll be like Germany, that we'll be able to paper our walls with the currency, and that was Germany, World War I.
I mean, I hope it doesn't get that bad, but it certainly might. I mean, there's a good chance. I don't know what the probability is, but you know, I mean, that could happen. You know, the stories. You know, a guy was in Germany and he leaves a wheelbarrow full of money out front of the store while he goes in, and he comes back outside, and all the money's dumped on the ground, and someone stole the wheelbarrow. You know, I mean, so money can lose value very, very quickly when it has no intrinsic value, and you got a guy like helicopter Ben Bernanke at the helm of the Fed, you know, just, running the printing presses at full steam. And the Fed might very well do that to try to stop this housing bubble from collapsing and, you know, to stop the deflation of asset prices. I mean, that's the real deflation these guys are afraid of. You know, consumer prices have no chance of going down. They're going up, but these asset prices really aren't going to come down unless the government creates enough inflation to create the illusion that they don't come down.
I'll tell you something. You wouldn't want to live in Indiana. We have a housing boom of 100,000 to 200,000, but there's one bad thing about this state that's very prominent in the last 20 years. It's a no-fault state where your employer anywhere in the state can look you up on the Internet to see if you're paying a mortgage, financing a car, paying child support, or paying off a student loan, and he can fire you for any reason or no reason at all.
Well, I happen to believe that, you know, that people should be able to be fired and people should be able to quit for whatever reason they want, barring a contract. And I like an at-will. I mean, I'm an employer myself, and I certainly think it's my prerogative to be able to fire somebody just because I don't like, the color of their hair. And I think that an employee, you know, obviously has the same right. I mean, anybody can quit, and I don't have a right to say, hey, you know, you quit unfairly. People can quit whenever they want, and so if you can quit, you should be able to get fired. And, you know, the easier it is to fire somebody, the more likely you are to hire people. You always want to have it in a free economy. You always want to make it as easy as possible for an employer to hire somebody. And the way you make it easy to hire somebody is you make it easy to fire people. Because then people, you know, you can hire somebody. In some of these European countries or some place where they have very high unemployment, it's so difficult to fire somebody that nobody dare hire anybody. Because you're afraid if you screw up, you're stuck. You can't get rid of them. And I've always felt that, I mean, anybody who's an employer that just, you know, arbitrarily fires people, they're going to have a tough time eventually because they're not going to keep good people and their competitors will. I mean, the bottom line from an employer is that you want to make a good profit, you want to hire the best people to help you do that. And generally, if you just arbitrarily go around firing people, you're going to have a tough time attracting the best.
Yeah, in Indiana, between employer and employee, there's no loyalty anymore like there used to be 20 years ago.
I can imagine that. I mean, because we've been destroying so much. I try to create, you know, I mean, most of the guys, you know, in my office, I mean, there's been a lot of attrition, as people know, but there have been, you know, I'm hoping to keep a lot of my guys, you know, with me. And, you know, we've been moving around a lot. But, yeah, I mean, today, people don't, you know, stay with their employers, for life the way they used to.
Yeah, Matt,
that's a whole different program to really get into labor laws. But anyway, I really appreciate your call. Are you a client of ours?
No, but I'd like to be in the future.
Well, pick up the phone and call up our office and open up an account. It's a good time right now for some of our stocks to pull back, so it's a good time to get on board.
Are you involved with Jefferson Pilot?
No.
No?
No. But anyway, give us a call. It's 800-727-7922.
Okay, I'll...
my website, too, www.europac.net.
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thank you, sir.
Anyway, yeah, it's a good time. Let's play the commercial one more time. And again, let me give out the phone number, too. We've only gotten one call for the entire first 40 minutes of the program. I think this is a record. I don't know what's going on. Hopefully it's not because people are having a problem hearing me again. I hope that's not the case. I hope the signal is coming out because apparently they got some new equipment and we were having some problems. So I hope that the people are actually hearing this broadcast. And that's why we're not, you know, I don't know why we're not getting the calls. But anyway, the number to call toll free is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. 9597. And let's take a quick break, and we'll be back for the last segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Hey, we're back. This is the last segment. It's Peter Schiff, the host of Wall Street Unspun. And anyway, let's go right to the phones. I've got a call on the line, David from Ohio.
You were talking earlier on unemployment statistics, and it's something I speculated the government hasn't been telling the truth about all along, is that when they say unemployment's real low, I mean, when you look at Ohio, I mean, we have more closed businesses, foreclosures are going up all the time, bankruptcies, just everything is just getting worse and worse. And
yeah, you know what's happening is a lot of people that are just long-term, hardcore unemployed, that are just not even looking for work, these people are not in the statistics at all. And then I think a lot of people, you know, who lost their jobs but are homeowners, I have a feeling that a lot of people have decided not to re-enter the workforce. Maybe they couldn't find a job, but they figure they don't need one because they own a house. And they're just constantly cashing out equity and living off the equity extractions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a lot of that going on, particularly in a place like California. I mean, you know, why work if you just own the average house and it's been going up by $100,000 a year? That's twice what you could earn, you know, if you were working. So I think there's a lot of incentives for people not to work. If you look at the labor force participation and the number of people actually employed, it's been shrinking.
Yeah.
That could be a good thing. I mean, I personally think that people leaving the workforce can be a good sign if, you know, for example, let's say more women with children are leaving the workforce because their husbands' incomes are rising sufficiently that they no longer need to work. That's a good thing. It shows a rising standard of living.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's what's been happening. I don't think people are leaving the workforce because their, you know, the family's standard of living is rising. I think they're leaving the workforce because they can't find work. But they're not looking for it, so they're not showing up in the unemployment statistics.
Yeah, but it's definitely not good. I mean, if all our products coming in from China and more jobs leaving here for there, I mean, that's not helping us at all, really.
Well, no. I mean, that's part of the problem because we are importing so much of our products. So, you know, generally, if Americans spend money on goods, if those profits are going to American companies, then they get plowed back into investment and employment opportunities here in America. But the problem is when Americans go to a store and buy a product, the profits are in China or Japan or someplace else. And so that's where the investment is. That's where the employment is, over there. It's not over here. That's the big leak. That's one of the big flaws in our economic, this current model, where we import instead of making things ourselves.
Yeah, I just don't understand why our government keeps letting this go on, and where's it going to end?
It's going to end in disaster. It's going to end in tears. I mean, this is not going to be a pretty picture. And the only thing that you can do as an individual American is to try to make sure that financially you suffer as little as possible. You got to mitigate your own damages. And the way to do that is not to have U.S. dollar investments, not to have U.S. stocks, not to have U.S. real estate, not to have U.S. dollars. Don't have bonds or anything denominated in U.S. currency because that's going to be the casualty.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get your wealth out of the U.S., out of the dollar, and make conservative investments and get income off of it and wait this thing out. Wait this thing out from a safe vantage point because it's not going to end. It's not going to be pretty. We are setting us up for a real disaster. And very few people can see it, I mean, as a percentage. And, you know, the mainstream is going to, you know, call somebody like me, you know, a chicken little, you know, a gloom and doomer. I'm just saying this, but this is the reality. I mean, people can make fun of it. They can just dismiss it as some pie in the sky, paranoia or, you know, but that's not the case.
Yes.
These are some real serious things. You can't just borrow forever and not save. You can't just consume and not produce and run up massive debts to the rest of the world and expect that it's going to go on forever.
I guess Bush thinks that's okay, though.
It's all nonsense. You know, and the biggest part of it is that they think the rest of the world, they're all a bunch of suckers, that they're going to continue this forever. That the rest of the world is so convinced that they need us to consume all their stuff, they need us to borrow all their money, that they're going to keep on lending to us, because if they let us go broke, that somehow that's worse for them. That somehow Americans going bankrupt is worse for the Japanese and the Chinese, so they will not let us go bankrupt. They'd rather bankrupt themselves than bankrupt us, which doesn't make any sense. So they're going to bankrupt themselves so they can keep us from going bankrupt because they don't want to go bankrupt. It's all a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah.
In one of these days, you know, and it might be tomorrow, it might be next week, next month, next year, whenever it is, you know, a billion people are going to wake up, and that's it. And we're off the Asia gravy train.
Yep. And, probably Iraq war situation isn't going to help nothing either.
So are you a client, Dave?
No.
Oh, what's stopping you?
I'll keep that in mind if you got a number of your backup with you.
Well, call us up. I mean, we're on. Have you visited my website?
No, not yet.
Oh, you listen on shortwave?
Yes.
Yeah, my website is www.europac.net, EUROPAC.net. And, you know, look at the site, read some of my articles, you know, learn about the company, and call us up and open up an account. Because just knowing, you know, just understanding is the first part, but it's not the most important part. You've got to complete the process. You've got to protect your wealth. For sure, understand there's a problem. Admit there's a problem. That's number one. But number two is do something about it. You know, it doesn't do any good if you go just as broke as the people who didn't see it coming. In fact, it's worse. If you see it coming but don't get out of the way, you know, there's a problem there, and you could live to regret that. The people who had no idea, they have no regrets. It's like, oh, well, I mean, I couldn't have done anything about it. I mean, nobody could have seen this coming. But if you see it coming and you have an opportunity to protect yourself and then you don't do anything, And then you get clobbered, you go broke. Now you've got the, oh, why didn't I do it? I knew it was going to happen. Why didn't I act? Why did I just sit there, you know?
Well, actually, this is something
like... You don't want to be kicking yourself in the butt for not acting, so act.
Yeah.
And that applies to everybody who's listening to the sound of my voice. If you've been listening to this program for a number of months, if you're convinced that I'm right, but you've done nothing, you still don't have an account with Euro Pacific Capital, you run the risk of being in a situation where you're kicking yourself in the fanny because you let the opportunity to protect your wealth slip by. Don't do that. I don't want that to happen to you. So, you know, pick up a phone, give us a call, and get moving. You know, talk to one of my brokers and protect your wealth and get a good income, get a good return on your investments. You know, this is not a situation where, you know, we're burying your money in gold bullion or something, and you don't get any income, and if we bet wrong, you could lose big. We're making very conservative investments around the world, and I think people are going to do well, even if I'm wrong. That's the beauty of my strategy. I think even if I'm dead wrong, even if I'm 100% wrong, and nothing bad happens, I still think people are better off investing abroad than investing here. You know, the valuations are better, the yields are better, the growth prospects are better. Even if nothing happens, you're better off.
You have a different number for that, don't you?
Yeah, it's 800.
Okay.
727-7922.
Okay, 800-727-7922.
Yeah, and thanks for the call. Tell your friends and, you know, get more people to listen.
Yes. Have you been on any AM stations? Or?
I've been a guest on various AM talk shows, but, I mean, I'm not on there on a regular basis. The only thing I do regularly is this one show once a week.
Okay, thanks again.
Okay, if you know any shows, call in, you know, say, hey, you ought to have Peter Schiff on, you know, any talk shows or anything.
All right.
Okay, thanks for listening. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, bye.
Is anybody listening on the Internet? I mean, if you're listening to this show and you're on the Internet, give me a call, because I'm wondering how the signal is doing, if people are getting it. The number is 888 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. We only have about 10 minutes left of the show, so if you're going to call, do it soon. Anyway, so what else we got going on? You know, this week we got the productivity numbers that came out, or rather the lack of productivity numbers, and I was surprised that the market didn't react more to this. Fourth quarter productivity was minus a half a percent. And labor costs rose 3.3%. So we had a fall in productivity and an increase in labor costs. Pretty inflationary numbers. Now, you know, of course, I've talked about these productivity numbers. I think they're all bullshit as well. You know, any number that's coming out of the government is bull. You know, they are reverse engineered. The government has an agenda, and the job of these numbers is to validate that agenda, validate that reality or that lack of reality. And I don't understand why the media and why Wall Street can't get their arms around this concept, that they can't understand that politicians are corrupt, politicians lie, politicians want to get reelected. We know this about politicians. We know that none of these guys are honest. If they were honest, they wouldn't be in office, right? You can't be an honest politician. You can't get elected. A dishonest politician is always going to beat an honest politician. A man of principle is not going to be able to win an election against a guy. And the way you know this, the way you prove this, and of course, if this is an indictment of democracy, it's intentional, because I'm not a fan of democracy. I never have been. Neither were founding fathers. Neither were, you know, the framers of the Constitution were vehemently opposed to democracy. They called it mobocracy. You know, they didn't want America to be a democracy. They set us up as a republic. That's why Franklin, when they asked him, what did you give us? He said, a republic, if you can keep it. He meant if you can keep it and not let it degenerate into a democracy, which they knew would lead to disaster. But one of the reasons why democracy guarantees that the more dishonest person always wins elections is, think about it this way. You get two candidates in an election. One guy is doing what he thinks is right. He's not looking at the polls. He's going to do in his platform, and he's for the legislation that is good, that he thinks is right and that is good for the people, let's say. Another politician doesn't care what's good for the people or what's right. He just does what he thinks is going to get him more votes, either more political support, more money from a special interest. He just does whatever he thinks he needs to do to get elected. Well, who's going to win? Obviously, the guy who's doing what he needs to do to get elected, because he's going to get the votes, because he's taking positions and doing things that result in votes. The honest politician is taking positions and doing things without worrying about whether or not it costs him or gets him votes. He's concentrating on what he thinks is right. Well, that guy's just not going to win. And if he somehow manages to get elected, he ain't going to get reelected. And the thing about our political system is, once you're in office, it's really hard to get rid of you. So once one of these dishonest guys gets in there, I mean, he's in there for the duration. Now I lost my train of thought. I digressed into this democracy little speech, and I can't remember where, especially how I'm getting older, I can't remember what the point I was making before I digressed into democracy. Oh, yeah, I was saying, so given the fact that we know politicians are a bunch of liars, right, and most of them are lawyers, and of course, you know, I mean, lawyers, not that I have anything against them in particular, but I mean, lawyers, in many cases, are professional liars. I mean, they represent, you know, you represent a client, and you know your client is guilty, but you got to pretend he's innocent. I mean, lawyers will always advance an argument, whether they agree with it or not. Any kind of lawsuit, I mean, it's all about come up with an argument. Whether it's true or not, I need an argument, I need representation. So they're very good at arguing things, even if they know that they're not true. And so when it's so obvious that politicians are a bunch of liars, then why is it that Wall Street can't understand that these numbers, whether they're CPI or GMP or productivity, that these numbers are cooked? Why can't they understand that? It makes perfect sense. You know, and how is it, isn't it easier for politicians to get reelected if the public thinks things are good? So don't they think they're good if you give them phony numbers? Sure, of course. You know, and of course the government, what do they get by phony numbers on inflation? Well, they don't have to increase payments as much on these COLAs. Also, interest rates stay lower as a result of people believing these lies. That keeps the cost down for financing the national debt, keeps the housing bubble inflated. I mean, there's a million reasons. You know, here you've got the government coming up with these numbers is like the fox guarding the hen house. And if the fox is guarding the hen house, why should anybody be surprised that the fox is eating some of these hens? It just never ceases to amaze me. And that when I point out the fact that these numbers are cooked, that they all think it's just some nonsense, that it's some conspiracy theory kook, that there's no way that the government would do that, that they're just all so honest, you know, when it comes to these numbers, and it's just a bunch of nonsense. Well, we've got the big number now, the granddaddy number, the number that everybody, at least for the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, has been the most important number, the monthly jobs report. The monthly non-farm payrolls are coming out on Friday. And we will see. I think they're looking for another couple of 100,000 jobs to be added. You can be assured that very few of those jobs will be in manufacturing. I mean, many. In fact, we could see a loss of manufacturing jobs. And there'll be a lot of service sector jobs that are going to go away, a lot of government jobs, some construction jobs that are all going to die with the housing bust. But I would once again take the under. I think that we'll probably not have as many jobs created as Wall Street is looking for. In any event, I know we have one caller that just came in. We only have a few minutes left, so let's make it quick. We got Steve calling from up north in Toronto. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
Okay.
What was I going to say? We had a huge mining show up here the last few days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just a huge fire. It could have took some players out of the market temporarily.
What'd you say?
It could have took some players out of the market, because, I mean, it's a huge one up there.
Yeah, I know about that show. You know, I am headed to the Asian Mining Conference in Singapore in about 3 weeks.
Oh, is that right, eh?
Peter, I'm actually speaking at it. I'm on a panel on junior mining stocks. And not that I know too much about them, but they put me on this panel anyway, so I'll wing it. And then I have, I think, a workshop that'll be just me. And that's going to be, I think, on March 30th or so in Singapore. So if anybody's going to be there, stop by.
Yeah, I got down the show on Sunday. It was very, very well attended. A lot of people there. And I don't even look at that as contrarian because for, I don't know, 10 or 15 years, I think they thought about canceling it.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe when they start hanging from the rafters or something, maybe then we look at it that way. But I mean, for now, it's great. But, it's a great show. You got your exploration companies, your majors, everything.
I go to the one that comes here in New York. One of these days I got to get to Canada, but every year they have a New York old show. So.
Yeah, I sent you a link for our business station up here. I don't know if you got it or not.
Not sure.
Yeah, the report on, because they cover the commodities pretty good, you know, probably a lot better than the ones down there, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, thanks for the heads up.
Yeah.
We're running low on time.
Yeah, okay. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Steve, for the call. Yep, we got about 1 minute left. I thank everybody for listening. I hope that the signal was coming in loud and clear for those of you listening on the internet at www.europac.net. I will be here again next week, same time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, at www.europac.net, and also on shortwave radio at 5.07 megahertz. If you miss this or your friends, they can catch the rebroadcast Saturday night, 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, 9.32 megahertz. You can check the archives at www.europac.net to listen to the archive shows. Make sure to sign up for my newsletter on my website, The Global Investor, and download the research report on the powerful case for investing in foreign stocks, and buy some gold at the Perth Mint. Perth Mint Certificate Program, the best way to buy gold. Learn about it at goldyoucanfold.com or on my website. And again, to get the research report, you can download on my website or at researchreport1.com, researchreport1.com. Again, this has been Peter Schiff, President of Euro Pacific Capital. Thanks for listening.